Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, February 26th. I'm Alan Shartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, from primary care to cardiac rehabilitation, building a comprehensive heart health program for the greater Saratoga community, saratogahospital.org. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday are Dr. Richard Kim and physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. They're here to answer your questions about orthopedics and sports medicine. You know we're going to get a lot of calls today, so get yours in now. Doesn't take that long. Get online, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Physical therapy, sports injuries, your calls, much more, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WRNC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us today for Medical Monday are Dr. Richard Kim and physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Originally from the West Coast, Dr. Kim has made the Capital Region his home after attending Albany Medical College, where he also completed a fellowship in primary care sports medicine. He's involved in many local athletic organizations as a team physician. As a physician with the United States rugby teams, he's cared for high-level athletes and their sports-related concussions and non-operative musculoskeletal problems of all varieties and degrees. He currently practices with kinetic sports medicine in Saratoga Springs. Matthew Goodemote is the owner of Goodemote Physical Therapy in Saratoga Springs. His 20 years of experience includes exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Dr. Kim, Matthew Goodemote, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thanks, Alan.
Glad you're here. Dr. Kim, you're not a surgeon.
I am not.
But what would somebody come to you for?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people come to me for different sort of aches and pains, sometimes acute, sometimes chronic. But, you know, the thing that we're trying to often do is find solutions for their pains and aches without surgical solutions necessarily.
Sure.
And so we do a lot of prescription of physical therapy, like to Matt Goodemote here. A lot of injections, and I do a fair amount of regenerative medicine, including stem cells and stuff like that. So it's a broad spectrum of things that we do.
Now, I'm fascinated by that. When you say stem
sure.
cell, what do you do?
Sure. Yeah, so regenerative medicine is this field that we're doing now, where basically from what we call autologous, or basically from you, I'll go and harvest stem cells out of either your fat or your bone marrow, and even sometimes your blood, and then basically get down to a product where we can re-inject them back into a space. Typically, your hips, knees, shoulders, that sort of thing is fairly typical, and sometimes into tendons and stuff.
And Matt, what do you do particularly interesting that we might want to talk about?
Oh, I do lots of things, Alan. So I do see a lot of the patients after Dr. Kim has done his procedures. And so if it's a stem cell, then I would see post-stem cell procedures. And my specialty is in the spine. So I'm trained in what's called the McKenzie method. And there's a level of certification, and I have what's called a diploma. And there's only 350 of us in the world who have that level of training. So, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number to talk to these two amazing guys is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we'll go to David in Milton, New York. Okay, David, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, David.
Go ahead.
My question was for L-glutamine. I want to know if when you're exercising, especially doing cardio exercising and then a bit of weight training, will L-glutamine help preserve that muscle? Does it have other benefits? And if so, how much should you be supplementing?
So, Dr. Kim, before we go on, the tradition around here is to always say what the thing we're talking about is.
Sure. So L-glutamine is an amino acid, and a lot of people take amino acids as part of exercise and exercise recovery. Whether or not specifically L-glutamine is key over other amino acids, I think is a little bit difficult to answer. And it's a little bit tough, too, when you talk about supplements in general, the evidence behind them, and sometimes can be modest at best. I use a lot of L-glutamine in my post-stem cell injections and recommendation of diet in terms of recovery and recovery from pain, but from a specific post-exercise and how much to take is a little bit murky. Yeah. I don't know, Matt, if you ever...
Yeah, the same. I did just read a recent study post knee replacement, and that was one of the amino acids in it. But I would agree that it's pretty murky, and there's no... I've never read anything real concrete about it, that especially with dosage, that there's a certain dosage that they would recommend. So, yeah.
Okay. Is there anything you guys would recommend for taking a post-workout to keep the body healthy and just make sure that you're recovering as quickly as possible and doing the least damage you can do to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, for me, one of my favorite go-tos is actually chocolate milk. Uh-huh. You've got multiple sources of carbohydrates. You've got some amino acids. It tastes good, and it's pretty readily available. So from a post-workout perspective, that's one of my go-tos.
If you're using for muscle building, then creatine monophosphate's another one that helps support development of muscle. So, and then it's funny you say that, because that's what I recommend to my son after we work out, is that he gets some chocolate milk instead of investing in some kind of sports drink or something like that. Yeah.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate
it. All right, great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. All right. And now over to Kelly in Albany. Kelly in Albany, you are on. Go ahead.
Oh, it's Kathy. I had been to 7 orthopedists, and they had done a number of tests after a car accident, MRI, x-ray, et cetera, and said there was nothing they could do for me, and referred me to pain management. I ended up at Dr. Kim's office, not for pain management,
Kathy,
for treatment. And I wanted him to share how within 15 minutes using an ultrasound machine, he had found multiple areas of nerve entrapment and then treated them successfully.
And you are not a relative of that.
I am not. I am a patient success story.
Go ahead, doctor.
Oh, well. Thanks for calling, Kathy. You know, it's one of these things where you got to get the right diagnosis before you can figure out the right treatment. And in her case, it was very much a knee pain, and the knee pain that, you know, if you sort of listened to her and examined her, it came down to a neurologic etiology and origin. So, I mean, the thing about that was that there is this sort of referred phenomena, meaning that you feel it somewhere else, despite the problem being higher upstream. And actually, between myself and, I believe, Matt, we tackled the problem.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I think is most important in the relationship I enjoy with Dr. Kim, is the consistency I hear from the patients about listening to them and then really trying to seek out the source of their specific condition. So,
okay, Kathy, thanks for your call. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent, better than excellent. We'll go to Stephen in South Glens Falls. Okay, Stephen, you're on.
Good afternoon, Dr. Kim. I have actually two very quick questions. The first is, is there good evidence-based data supporting the use of stem cell injection in joint disease? And if so, where might I find it? The second is regarding a right moderate carpal tunnel issue that I have that was alleviated in the terms of wrist pain by a steroid injection several months ago, but which I suspect is also causing a bit of a chronic low-grade achiness, not only in my right elbow, but up into the area of the right clavicle, kind of deep to the clavicle. Is that likely?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for calling and asking your questions. With regards to the stem cell data, it's pretty good at the moment. It is continually getting better, and part of it is that, you know, stem cell treatment is very individualized. You know, if you're 50 versus if you're 70, the quality of your stem cells are different. If you have, you know, zero disease versus three other diseases, that does make an impact on your stem cells. So making that same sort of evidence behind it is a little bit tough. You know, it's not like, you know, atorvastatin where you crank off 50 pills off of a machine and can evaluate it. So essentially the stem cells you get from each person and giving back to them is unique to that individual.
Will the insurance companies pay for it?
Yeah, great question. At this point in time, the insurance companies still consider it an experimental therapy and treatment.
Okay. Now, I want everybody to know that you can call up about any part of your, you know, your body that may hurt, your back, your knee, whatever else. I don't want you to only concentrate here on stem cell stuff.
The second question with regards to your carpal tunnel, sometimes if you do have a distal lesion or what we call a nerve entrapment, you can experience things higher upstream. Sometimes you can have what we call a double impingement, meaning you have a problem higher up, closer to the neck or underneath the clavicle, and then therefore causing pain in a couple different locations. So not only should you undergo an EMG, which is an electromyogram, which is basically a needle-based study, putting little bits of electricity, trying to figure out how well the wires in your arm are functioning. That can help discern. And then sometimes you just have to trial diagnostic injections in order to see if they're helpful. But I know certainly I'm not the only one that
yeah.
sees this.
I definitely have seen this repeatedly. And the first thing I would do is when someone comes in with carpal tunnel is I actually examine the cervical spine, because there's often times that it is a referred symptom from the cervical spine. So the instant I actually waved my hand, which of course you can't see because we're on the radio, but as soon as you said you had some other symptoms at the elbow and I pointed up towards my neck and you said at the clavicle. So my examination would be to examine the cervical spine to see, does it have any influence on how the hand is feeling, and does it have any influence on the carpal tunnel? Because if it does, it could just be cervical.
Thank you, Stephen. Okay. And now we're going to, we're going to go to Carolyn in Red. Oh, now we're going to take a break. Then we're going to go to Carolyn in Red.
Support comes from Act Smart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opioid use disorder and medical treatment for alcohol problems, actsmartnewyork.com. Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy, and acupuncture, specializing in Lyme disease. Now accepting new primary care patients, windhorsenaturopathic.com. Adelphi University's Hudson Valley Center, offering flexible social work graduate degrees, including a part-time Master of Social Work program combining on-campus and online coursework. adelphi.edu/MSW. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. the-gazebo.com. And from Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends.
Okay, Carolyn and Red Hook, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, Doctor. Hi, Alan. Hi. My friend has a cervical disc stenosis in his neck. He's in his 80s. He's always been very active, and this has been going on since last spring, where he had extreme pain, and I ended up taking him into the ER, and they gave him meloxicam, and he's doing stretching exercises with his neck, but it affects his ability to move his head from side to side and see peripherally while driving, And it also is, we've used heat therapy, and when it's the worst, we're using, you know, like a cold pack. But we had recommended to us a TENS therapy. It's not something he's going to have surgery on, but it seems to get worse when he's under stress, which he has been under quite a bit. And he doesn't want to keep taking the meloxicam. He's taking it as needed at night and just allowing it to become, I think, more inflamed than probably would be good for the area. Do you have any suggestions, and do you have any input with regard to the usefulness of the TENS unit therapy?
Well, first of all, thanks for calling and asking the question. But, yeah, with regards to TENS units and additional modalities, especially with something like a cervical stenosis where your options surgically are pretty limited, the, idea there is to maximize as much as you can do. It sounds like, unfortunately, you know, he's pretty limited in his quality of life. And that's just...
Well, he works full time.
Sure.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he's not about to give that up tomorrow, but he has his pain level goes too high, and I'm concerned about ongoing damage to the area and what else might be done, including possibly TENS therapy, to reduce the inflammation and give him a better quality and less pain.
Okay, so I'm going to call a halt a little bit here to get a couple of things straight. What is TENS therapy? Because, you know, we try to make sure that everybody on the outside understands what this is all about and what the name of that medicine is.
It's electrostimulation.
Yeah, right.
It's a TENS unit is, I don't even remember what the T stands for.
Transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation.
Yeah. So the first thing that I would do, I'm the physical therapist here, and the first thing that I would do is I would examine the range of motion, and I would recommend things like manual therapies where he would have either a massage therapist or ideally a physical therapist doing some work on the muscles around the neck and working on posture.
Had that twice.
Okay. And as far as the TENS unit goes, it's typically, it's definitely safe to use and it's worth trying. Whether it's going to have significant results or not is definitely dependent on the person. And I honestly have seen both where people swear by it and they can't wait to use it. And I have other people that try it and does nothing. So...
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, definitely at this point, I mean, you're looking at trying to get symptomatic relief. You're not going to get a curative, you know, quote unquote fix, but, you know, you're going to try as many additional modalities, including the TENS unit. Do I think it's safe to use? Yes, I think it's safe to use. Do I think that it's going to make everything go away? No, not necessarily. But if it can bring back some quality of life to him, I think that's of, you know, some huge benefits.
Ongoing stretching useful?
It depends on the stretching,
if it's
of course.
Not forced.
Right, but it also depends on the type. So, you know, just doing general range of motion is, of course, safe and it's good. There's certain times that I found that the stretching is actually, if it's not having any effect, it could be because it's not the right stretch to be done. And the one area that I really focus on when it's cervical stenosis is the thoracic spine. So if he hasn't had his thoracic spine addressed, the thoracic spine is the joints below the cervical spine.
Yes.
It has to be addressed because if he's sitting a lot at the office, then his posture is going to be, so that would be my starting point. If he hasn't already tried it, that would be a first starting point. And possibly looking for I go back to the manual therapy just because we have such good results with patients who,
thank you, Carol,
who have that. So.
Okay, and now on to Marsha in Latham. Okay, Marsha in Latham, you're on.
Yes, hi, doctor, and hello, Alan.
Hello. Hi, Marsha.
I'm calling regarding a knee replacement I had about 2.5 years ago. I still have a lot of swelling. I can't straighten my leg. I have a lot of pain in the knee. I did probably a year or so of physical therapy. I had a knee manipulation done at about 8 months. Now I can't walk without a lot of pain. I guess my question would be, where would I go from here?
So just a quick question to you. Was that knee manipulation helpful?
Not really.
I see.
And what is a knee manipulation?
So to explain that a bit, a knee manipulation is typically where the surgeon, after Having had the surgery, we'll suspect that there's a certain amount of scarring that had formed. Right. So under anesthesia, they will then go and basically press the knee to get into full flexion or get to the range of motion that they're looking to try to get to. Yeah.
What I found with these kind of cases, the swelling is part of the pain, so that has to be dealt with. And I'm a huge advocate of compression, and I found lots of patients, especially postoperatively, using compression to reduce the swelling. That will reduce the pain. That will allow some of the range of motion to come, and then the snowball starts to turn the other way.
So, Matt, what do you mean by compression?
So I use, I recommend like a compression sleeve. And just something you could buy at any store. You can buy it at a grocery store as well as a sporting goods store. And it's something that you can get online too that goes a little bit higher perhaps in the thigh and below the knee. But I've had dozens and dozens of patients, especially post knee replacement, where the swelling was the source of the pain all along and you can't get out in front of it because the swelling is so much. So, and the other part of I like swelling is because you can do it all the time. You can wear it throughout the whole day, whereas if you're using ice or heat, you have it, you know, a limited time frame.
You read my mind. I wanted to know what you guys thinking about ice and heat.
At this stage, ice isn't. Ice is great for pain control because it's an analgesic, but it's not going to get rid of the swelling.
Yeah.
Elevation and compression are what's going to get rid of the swelling. And I'm going to go back to the manual therapy too. There's techniques you can do in physical therapy that help to get the fluid moving in the leg, and that would be my focus. Someone coming in at this stage would be all about getting rid of the swelling.
And to sort of add on to what Matt was saying, when you do offer a little bit of compression, your what we call the musculotendinous junction, where the muscle hits the tendon, is sort of giving you the feedback as in terms of how your knee is positioned in space and such things. So adding that compression will also help with some mobility as well.
For sure.
Beyond just the pain.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, and now we've got a lot of calls here, and we want to get to everybody we can. Oh, yeah. Let's go to Jim in Valencia. All right, Jim, you're on. Hey,
Hi, Jim.
Hello?
Jim going once. Hello, Jim. Okay, so you gotta stay with it, guys. Jim is gone, and now on to Susie in Worthington. Okay, Susie in Worthington, your turn.
Hi.
Hi, Susie.
I think you've answered some of these questions, but I have stenosis disc degenerative disease. I'm 73 almost, and I have stenosis in the C5, C6, and then they wrote down exit foramen and endoplate spondylosis. So my question, I think you answered it about the stem cell. I think I'm too old. I think that's...
Yeah, so to define some of the terms here a little bit, so stenosis usually means a narrowing of a canal, and the nerves dependent are dependent on the patency of these canals in order to function.
What do you mean by patency?
Patency means just openness. I don't know if that's the best terminology, but that's the idea. So it depends on where the stenosis is. With regards to how that then matters with stem cells, I got to tell you that it there isn't an upper limit for that. My oldest patient was in their 90s and did very well with it. In terms of age or what we call comorbidities or additional diseases, usually isn't a limiter. However, it's a pretty challenging area. So it really depends on how your imaging turns out and how your physical exam is and so forth.
Thank you very much. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. Got a lot of people to get to. I'm doing my best here. Let's go to Anna in Latham. Okay, Anna in Latham, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I actually have a question regarding my 17-year-old daughter. She's complained about her wrist and her aches and pains in her wrists and fingers. We have ruled out that it's not carpal tunnel because both of my wrists had been surgery for carpal tunnel, but she's been diagnosed that it's not carpal tunnel. And her pediatrician had checked for arthritis, and she doesn't have it. So we're wondering what's the next things and what could possibly be.
Yes.
If you have any idea.
Thanks, Anna. How long has she had this?
Been on and off for, I would say, months, maybe, you know, 5-6 months.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess...
And she's an avid knitter. And we think, you know, her posture being teenagers is not the best.
Yeah.
So we always tell her, you know, go watch your postures and do things. But it's, you know, quite poorly either way.
Yeah.
So, you know, she will stop knitting, and that doesn't really do anything. And she's in school. She's always writing. And, you know, with her phones and her laptops. And we say, watch your postures. But it seems like every now and then she would complain, and it really doesn't really correlate.
Yeah, so, you know, like anything else, you'd have to take a careful history and do a careful physical exam.
Yeah.
Oftentimes in knitters, I will see something called a de Quervain's tenosynovitis. So it's basically where two tendons are rubbing across each other and causing some inflammation.
Yeah.
And I'd have to, you know, again, talk to her and take an exam in order to find out a little information. But typically something like that can do quite well with some physical therapy or a steroid injection.
I heard the word. Did I hear a word, cappuccino or something like that?
Sorry, what was that, Alan?
I was thinking of the word. I kept hearing a word. Maybe it's my bad hearing. Cappuccino or something?
Carpal tunnel.
Carpal tunnel.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I had carpal tunnel, so that's been taken care of. So we think maybe, you know, I don't know, that's passed down in families or not. But anyway, we check hers, and she goes, no, she doesn't have carpal tunnel. And we check her blood, not arthritis. But it's like, you know, it's kind of weird. And she does, you know, sometimes she would like, you know, a heat compost, those sort of things, sort of comfort. I'm not sure it really help.
Matt? One of the things you can do is to start helping this get diagnosed properly is be really specific with her as to when she's having the symptoms and how quickly the symptoms go away when she stops, how long they last. So let's say she was knitting for 30 minutes and her wrist got sore and then she stopped knitting and the pain went right away. I wouldn't be overly concerned with that versus she knitted for 30 minutes and she stopped and 3 hours later it's still hurting. So
yeah,
getting
I think
some...
that's what I meant by it's not correlating because I think she was like not knitting for a few days and it still hurts.
It's more just, okay. So even when she's not doing activity, she's still having soreness. Honestly, that really, in my book, would warrant an investigation. So getting her to see somebody that would take their time and go through a more thorough history, just like Dr. Kim said. So there's a few things in there, and it could be something as simple as how she's holding the needles and making small modifications like that could make the world a difference to get her over the hump so that she doesn't continue to have the pain.
Thank you, Anna. Okay, now over to Larry in Woodstock. Larry in Woodstock, you're on.
I feel like I won the lotto. Okay.
Hey, Larry.
It seems like a big day for wrist injuries. I play a lot of tennis, and I have I think the source of my wrist pain is from playing tennis. I stopped playing, and the pain lingers on for weeks and weeks. I'm getting the feeling I haven't gone to a doctor to diagnose it. But I have a feeling it feels like it might be a tendonitis type of thing.
Yeah.
If that's the case, how would I treat something like that other than stopping the activity?
Yeah, it certainly with tennis and like any other sport, you're certainly at risk of having an overuse injury. Something like a tendonitis, presuming that that's what it is, you can start off with what we call the RICE therapy, rest, ice, compression, elevation, some of the things that Matt was talking about before. And that's usually a good place to start. But, you know, I would say 2 weeks that hasn't resolved, you probably should probably have that looked at by somebody.
Yeah, there's things about it could be as simple as the grip on the tennis racket, how that is that needs to be adjusted, which would need a tennis pro because I don't know how to adjust that. But it would be an examination to see tendonitis-wise where in the muscle in the forearm where you having soreness. Is it a joint? Because there also are cases where how you're holding the racket could affect a joint. and it could just be an irritation that way too. So in an examination, it kind of pieces itself together. It's hard to do over the air because we can't see your hand and can't make you do a whole bunch of tests, but that's kind of the direction I would go with it.
Yeah, especially with especially with the wrist.
What about cortisone shots? I'm averse to any surgery or even injections like that, but would cortisone help something like a wrist or another?
Again, it really depends. Yeah, again, it really just depends on, you know, what the underlying issue is. Sometimes cortisone can be helpful for some of those conditions and sometimes not. So it depends.
Thanks, Larry. Okay, over to Deborah in Ghent. All right, Deborah, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Deborah.
Hey. I had stem cell injections in my knees, and the doctor was going to do in my wrists and my hands at the same time, but there wasn't time. Okay. And he has since retired. Yeah. So I was wondering if I could come and see you.
Well, first of all, thanks for calling here. But yeah,
like, how do I get in touch with you?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different avenues to come and see me and learn about what I do. I have a monthly stem cell seminar coming up on March 29th. And then the second avenue would just be to come to my office and come see me for a regular appointment.
Want to give a number?
Yeah, sure. The phone number there is 518-871-9900.
How about you, Matt? You want to give him a
number? 9900?
Yeah.
And your name is Dr. Kim?
Dr. Correct. Richard Kim.
And the other person is Dr. Matt?
Yeah, my name is Matthew Goodemo, and our phone number is area code 518-306-6894.
Okay, Deborah, thank you. All right, now let's go. Okay, to David in New Paltz. David in New Paltz, you're on.
Hello, doctor.
Hi, David.
I'm a 76-year-old young fellow, mm-hmm. who stepped off his deck and slipped on the ice, and about two vertebrae down before they get into the rib cage area there, I hit directly on the step when I fell. And it seems to be 2 weeks ago, and I still feel fairly stiff from it. I can't say that I'm in too much pain, but I did go see a chiropractor about it, and he said there's no black and blue or any indication that anything was broken. But waking up in the morning, I'm still very stiff, and I'm aware of it even 2 weeks later.
Yeah, thanks for calling. The thing that I'd probably worry about with the description of pain where you're having is something like a compression fracture. Quite honestly, I'd probably start off with some x-rays and then take it from there.
Yeah, that is exactly my thought. You have to get an x-ray to see if there's anything going on. It was a fall. And then providing that there is nothing going on, then 2 weeks isn't that long a time for a major trauma. It would take, 2 to 4 weeks. So give it a couple.
And in terms of his complaint, what is this business about when you wake up in the morning? You know, when I wake up in the morning, my back hurts after an operation. But then for the rest of the day, it seems to get better. Wake up the next morning, hurts again. What's going on?
One of the things I like to tell my patients that something as simple as arthritis or degeneration, you tend to have stiffness, and not just in the spine, but in your joints. Another one, though, is the disc. So the intervertebral disc that sits in between the bones in the back. While you're sleeping at night, it's out drinking, and it's filling up with fluid. And so when you first wake up, there's more fluid in it. So
I'm going to steal this from Matt, but he often tells my patients, motion is lotion. So, you've got to get moving.
Interesting? Yeah. Okay, that's great. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back.
Support comes from Nathan LaTower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, announcing new primary care center on Main Street in Fonda, opening soon, nlh.org. Gear Village Senior Community, a not-for-profit community for independent assisted living, memory care, nursing, and rehabilitation, gearvillage.org. Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, an inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center providing healing focusing on the body, mind, and spirit, for those with various forms of addictions, villaveritas.org for inquiries. and from Berkshire Country Day, an independent pre-K to 9 school, comprehensive curriculum, and an emphasis on community. Now enrolling for fall 2018, intentional, independent, inspired, berkshirecountryday.org.
We're back. Thank you all for being here with us on the Medical Monday. Just great to talk to you. And we're going to go to, let's see here, Tom in Windsor, Massachusetts. All right, Tom in Windsor, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you for taking my call. About 20 years ago, I received a third-degree acromiolar clavicular shoulder separation. I was riding my bike. And, you know, I have full range of motion and everything, but I, you know, it's the bone sticking out of my shoulder, and it does give me some, you know, pain once in a while. At the time, they said that there was no really good operation for that. Is that still the case?
Yeah, so let me get this straight. You're still having pain, is that correct?
Well, a little bit, you know what I mean? You know, it's annoying at times, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so... So at first off, you know, most sort of minimal invasive methodologies, you know, like the rest, ice, and compression, once that's failed, we move on to something like a steroid injection. Usually if things fail with one steroid injection, I would usually move on to something like a regenerative product just to give it a trial and see how it goes. Oftentimes when it does come to a surgical solution, they'll do... a clavicle resection. So basically, they'll just cut out a section and stop that irritation just by removing the piece.
It's not going to be. To do a surgery for cosmetic reasons to make it not look like it does. So an AC separation is where there's your shoulder blade joins with your collarbone. And they make the AC, acromioclavicular joint. So the separation means those two joints separated, and a grade 3 means it was a substantial separation. And I don't, at this stage especially, it would be more just for the appearance. It would not be functionally helpful, in my opinion.
So they wouldn't be able to bring them back together again with Kevlar, right?
No, you'd be better off really working on some strengthening type of exercises to keep the shoulder working as best you could.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. All right, now to Josh in West Hurley. All right, Josh, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering if your guests might want to weigh in on some of the controversy about surgery for repairing, you know, cleaning up the meniscus in knees. I know there's a lot of controversy, studies that show it's not necessarily any more efficacious than physical therapy or even sham surgery. And I was just wondering what they might feel about it.
Yeah, so this is a pretty contentious topic. Obviously, from a non-operative standpoint, you know, we try to, again, maximize all the minimally invasive methods, including injection, alternative injection, some that we've already talked about. The basic idea, though, is that you can have sort of a degrading meniscus or you can have an acute tear of the meniscus. And the meniscus is that bit of cartilage cushion between what is your femur bone and the calf bone below or the tibia. And it's a pretty important cushion. My general slant on that is to try to preserve it for as much and as long as possible. Matt, you
there's just in. Times where, though, you can do anything you want to and it just needs to be repaired. So I'm definitely an advocate of trying ahead of time and seeing what you can do through therapy or other modalities like what Dr. Kim was talking about. And if you've tried that and you've given your fair go and it's still not working, then depends on the surgeon and surgery, but that's the kind of thing that there's times where you just need to have the surgery too.
Now, knees are tough, and people have been trying to recreate meniscuses for years and stuff. Are we getting any closer? Are we getting better?
Yeah, I mean, some of the surgery, I mean, talking about things that are experimental, I mean, I think it's still very much in that phase. It's not quite that reliable yet. But, you know, we do a lot of either platelet-rich plasma or stem cells for people with meniscus tears, and it's the same sort of idea. Can we try to minimize your pain and discomfort and bring you back to a quality of life that you're sort of, you know, expecting or used to?
I think it's tricky too, because it's not just the knee you're dealing with. If you have somebody that has a foot that's over pronating, the bottom part of your knee is your shin bone. It goes down into the ankle. So if you're getting too much at the foot, then it can influence the knee. And the same thing is true at the hip. If you have problems above, that's going to influence the knee. So I think it makes it tricky to do those kind of replacements.
Thank you, Josh. We'll go to Joanne in Rhinebeck. Joanne in Rhinebeck, you're on.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was told that I have a bone spur in my right heel. And I think they also said it had something to do with the Achilles tendon. I am on anti-inflammatories, and I want to know, is it safe to stay on an anti-inflammatory for a very long time?
Yeah. Thanks for calling. The anti-inflammatories, you know, they everything has their what we call a risk-benefit ratio. And one of the issues with being on an anti-inflammatory for prolonged periods of time is that it can erode the lining of your stomach in large and consistent doses, can have damaging effects to your kidneys. Eventually, you know, you want to try and find a more definitive therapy and treatment so that you don't have to rely on such things. But again, it all depends on really how much you're taking.
I'd also say that the heel spurs, there's lots of people out there that have bone spurs in their heel, and it has nothing to do with why their Achilles is hurting. So having that to be clear to make sure that they are really truly connected is important here.
Thank you, Joanne. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, although your chances are getting less and less of getting in right now. We will go to Jim in Valencia. All right, Jim in Valencia, your turn.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Hey, Jim.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. I'm 64 years old and decided to get back into skiing this year. But after each ski trip, I've been suffering with really sore elbows, which I think are probably related to pole plants or something like that. Wonder if you ever heard of that and have any suggestions.
Do you think it bothers you more on the sort of inner aspect of your elbow or the outer aspect of your elbow?
The outer, the pointy part of my elbow. It's actually quite sore to touch it, afterwards.
Yeah.
And actually, my left elbow is sore after skiing 2 weeks ago.
Without doing a full exam, it's hard to know for sure, but it sounds like you may have something called tennis elbow or lateral epicondylosis. Basically, it's the wearing of the tendon on the outside part of the elbow. Often seen not just in people who play tennis and sports, but it's another form of an overuse injury. Sometimes those therapies do quite well with, Matt was saying, manual-based therapies, right, and a good course of physical therapy. There's a type of procedure that I do called a needle tenonomy. Basically, I just take a needle and debride the tendon. So basically, try to scrape away the bad parts of the tendon, and then usually we can inject platelet-rich plasma on top, and then followed by a pretty extensive physical therapy course. But most people do quite well with it.
Yeah.
Matt?
Yeah, it's going to come back to what we were talking about, the tennis player, too, how you're holding the ski poles. So if you have a certain grip when you're doing it, it's most likely coming from there. And if you've gone past that threshold where you've irritated them to the point of inflammation, it depends on if you want to keep skiing. You can do things to keep people in the game, so to speak. But if it's really interfering with the rest of your life, that should be dealt with
sooner than later. Okay, and we'll go now to your neighbor, Alex in Saratoga Springs. Okay. Alex, you're on.
Hi, Alex.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a triathlete currently focusing on the half iron distance. So I consistently have, you know, some longer distance swims, bikes, and runs as part of my training. And my training load is going to start significantly increasing this spring as I get closer to my A race. So as somebody who's had lower back and hip issues in the past, I'm curious if you guys have any recommendations for injury prevention, and I'm thinking along the lines of something like strength training or mobility that would also function to enhance my performance
that I could be doing outside of my typical swim, bike, run training.
Yeah, I mean, from the I'll talk about it from sort of the physician side of things. You know, I oftentimes when I do see a lot of athletes, especially a lot of endurance athletes, you know, it's important that to have great athleticism, you have to have great strength across a joint, but you also have to have great flexibility across a joint. So I'd want to assess that and see how those are with you. And then imaging where it's appropriate. But, you know, again, trying to make sure that you're a good, well-rounded athlete, not just a good, well-rounded triathlete.
I often have people coming in like this, and I would do I call it a full body assessment or a total body assessment. So basically looking at you from the top to the bottom, and I do a video analysis. So I watch you go through some basic movements. And then because you've had those issues in the back and the hip, I would just want to identify specifically, is there something up there that needs to be dealt with? Because obviously as a triathlete, you're going to be doing a lot of running, and to make sure that you have the proper core strength. And then some underlying muscles that are often overlooked in the hip joint. I go after some deep rotator muscles that tends to be the culprits there. So that's what I would.
Thank you, Alex. Okay. let's see. Now we'll go to Stacy in Queensbury. Okay, Stacy, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Stacy.
Hello?
Go ahead, Stacy.
Yep.
You're on.
Hi. 4 years ago, I had a complete fracture of my tibia and fibula, a pylon fracture. 2 years ago, my orthopedic surgeon recommended either a fusion or an ankle replacement, and I opted to do an ankle replacement, which also included an Achilles lengthening surgery. And I have not had the success that I was hoping for, and I'm wondering at this point if there's any stem cell therapy that would benefit me, and also if not, I still have a lot of swelling. If there's any dietary information that you could give me to help me with swelling.
Yeah, so a two-part question there. So to address the idea of would regenerative medicine be beneficial in this scenario, there are some benefits still, even though you've undergone the prior operative repair. Again, I'd have to look at the imaging and figure out where the majority of your pain is coming from, but absolutely something like that would be helpful. The second question about dietary and, you know, and is the an anti-inflammatory diet and all these things useful. Again, I think it akin to sort of supplements. The data is pretty modest, but a lot of people like turmeric, a lot of people like vitamin E, fish oil, that sort of thing. Tart cherry sometimes can be helpful.
I would go back to that advocation of the compression. They have lots of compression sleeves for the ankle. If you're still getting swelling in the ankle specifically, that needs to be dealt with. And then it also is going to be relevant to look at your shoes and what kind of shoes you're wearing. There might be a certain type of a style of shoe that you need to wear to help get the ankle moving in the right direction, so to speak.
So is there compression? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is there compression for the back? In other words, do we
There's
have
not a
sleeve?
Great
no, not
sleeve.
Really.
Yeah, they have some new things.
I see some guy in the middle of the night hawking it on the television.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes some of the SI belts can offer you a little bit of relief,
yep.
But you know it's very localized. It's not you know the entirety of the spine.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Let's go to let's see here. How about Roxanne in Schenectady? Okay, Roxanne, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm so happy I got through. I'm in my late 60s, but I am very young. But I was diagnosed about a year and a half ago with midfoot arthritis, and I had two quick questions. One, is walking a good thing or a bad thing when you have arthritis? I used to walk a lot.
Okay, good
now
question. Now we're running out of time, Roxanne, okay. So ask the second question.
And the compression, like I have this thing that, you know, you pull on, which really compresses that area of my foot. Is that a good thing?
I want to just say quickly about the shoes that you have to take a look at with walking. Walking is great for you, and just because you have arthritis does not mean you should be inactive. In fact, it's quite the opposite.
Right.
You want to be active. However, if when you're walking, your foot's getting worse and worse, then I would first look into the shoes, and before I would look into compression without swelling, I would look at the shoes, and I would look at, do you have the proper support? Do you have the proper style of shoe?
Yeah, so, I mean, similar to what Matt said. Yeah. I would try to go
on
to things like cycling.
So it depends on my personal experience with walking then.
Yeah, because if you're walking and you're not having a lot of pain, then why would you stop walking? And if you have pain during the walking, but immediately when you stop it goes right away, then, again, I would encourage you to walk.
Yeah, I thought it was like wear and tear arthritis. I thought then it would create more wear and tear. So.
Nope. Activity is good for arthritis for sure.
Okay.
And
all
when,
right.
and
Thank
when you're
you
walking,
so much.
I find when I'm walking – Your back or whatever your problem is will tell you eventually.
Absolutely. Enough's enough.
Yeah. I know. You're a big walker like me, Alan. Yeah. So. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, bye-bye. Okay. Bye. That's about it, folks. I hate to say it because there are a lot of people on the line like Howard in Munson, Massachusetts, who wanted to talk about the fact that there was no cartilage in his shoulder. Irma in Pittsfield, who if she lays on her right arm and arm in her hand are asleep. And Susanna of Huntington, who says 83-year-old mom about to have hip replacement, what to do to prepare. And Jim in South Egremont, treatment for chronic back pain, chiropractic doesn't work. So I'm sorry for all of you who we left on the line. We are out of time. My apologies to those who we didn't get to. Thank you to Dr. Richard Kim and physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being with us today. Dr. Kim and Matthew Goodemote, you're always welcome back here. Support for the Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.